The Line in the Sand, written by Hieronfem, read by Something Incorporeal. Fandom: Dragon Age. Warnings for attempted rape, non-con, and violence. Vivian has survived many things. She's seen the rise and fall from power of many people, especially within the court. The game is hers to play, regardless of what others may think. And she is a powerful woman. She knows her strength, and knows how to use it to her best ability. However, right now, none of that seems to matter. Her body is screaming in agony, and she's doing her best to just stay conscious. Left arm sliced up beyond usability, right leg heavily bruised from a rock fall, recovering from a smite that's leaving her feeling weak as a kitten, and voiceless. She can barely keep herself upright. Of course, her co-captive isn't helping. Blackwall is bleeding sluggishly from his temple, his broad body lying sprawled in an untidy heap at the foot of a behemoth that watches him with dull eyes, their only light a torch that's been jammed into its crags. Like her, he's barely awake, barely moving. And if she's any judge, his arms have both been dislocated. The cave they're in is cold and damp, and his breathing is growing more ragged as time oozes inexorably on. There's a string of laughter from the stairs leading down in, and Vivian feels in herself the first real spike of true fear. The Templars she had known were never like these beasts. But she has the horrible suspicion that hers may have been the exception, not the rule. The Templar that walks in is a pleasant-looking man. Sandy hair, strong jaw, about the same skin tone as Josephine. He's perhaps the same age as Dorian and Cullen. He has exceptionally deep blue eyes, and the kind of smile that makes most women swoon. She knows his type. She can recognize a viper when she sees one. "Madame de Fer," he says with sickening fondness. His lackeys, mostly human still, all shift and sway on their feet, like marionettes with drunken puppeteers. One of them carries a torch. "First Enchanter Vivian, the Inquisitor's prettiest lapdog." The look she gives him has left lesser men dead. "Knight Captain Gervasio, formerly of Antiva City," he says. His accent is very well disguised, closer to a highly polished marcher than anything else. "I hope you don't mind our appointments. They're somewhat lacking, but they will do for now." The behemoth makes an odd, keening wail, and Gervasio is immediately distracted, walking over to gently pat the craggy face. "Nohen Asher, feed our poor brother," he croons, and the behemoth stumps away, following two of the more human knights. Her skin crawls as she watches it. A faint noise of agony brings her attention back to Blackwall, who Gervasio is now surveying with a look of intense satisfaction. "The champion," he says with relish, and for a moment she thinks he's convinced Blackwall for Hawk. But no. He simply heard of the man's particular skill set, which Adar had been loud in her praise of. Adar, she thinks privately, is a good woman, if very young, and far too enamoured of burly men. Gervasio crouches down, chuckling slightly. Blackwall flinches, breath becoming more laboured as he strokes the bloodied hair out of his face. "Oh no, this will not do." There's a short scream, as one arm is snapped back into its socket with a wrenching sound, and a weak little wail that makes her shudder. A second snap has him sobbing in both agony and relief. And she risks a look back, to see Gervaso smiling contentedly, as Black Wall's tears run down his face, cleaning blood and grime away with them.
"Much better, don't you think?"
he says sweetly, and one of the knights makes a rattling, hungry noise. Gervaso rises, and they're left alone, as he shepherds the others deeper into the cave, away from them. Vivian is slowly getting her strength back, feeling for her manner.
"Mum."
His voice is rusty with pain, and she shudders again. "Yes?"
"If you get a chance, please run."
She blinks. Blackwall's barrel of a chest heaves with every fight for breath, barely visible in the gloom.
"What? And leave you?" "Yes."
"Not a chance." She can almost feel her power again, just out of reach. "I don't believe in abandoning people." A few ragged breaths then.
"I can't watch them hurt you."
She completely loses her grip on the tendril of power. "Excuse me?" A cough and a wheeze in the darkness is her only answer for a moment, before he says,
"I've met too many men like the Intiven. Give them a bit of power, they'll go a mile. They can take your magic and, let's face it, you're smaller than me. You'd starve faster. You have to run."
She will never admit to a trembling lip. And when she speaks, her voice is perfectly even.
"You're in no position to order me about."
He laughs brokenly and falls silent. Vivian closes her eyes, trying to reach deeper, and shudders as the magic slips away again. It's the mental sensation of dragging fingers down a chalkboard, skin crawling in distaste. The light returns, and she opens her eyes as Gervaso returns to the room, with one of the knights in tow.
"Ah, madame,"
he said with a tone of delight.
"We really can't have that."
This time the smite is even harder, enough to make her cough up blood, and she gasps as she struggles to breathe. Gervaso saunters over, crouching down in front of her.
"You know what I like about mages?"
he asks conversationally, as she dry heaves, rage filling every fibre of her being.
"I like how they think they deserve to exist. I mean, just look at you, madame, daring to believe you could fix the circles. That a mage could be divine. That you aren't worth less than a common Mabari mutt."
The hatred blazes white hot in her, and she slowly looks up at him, letting it show.
"I bet you came close,"
he said thoughtfully.
"I've killed many mages at their harrowings. Some of them were even possessed. I bet you learned what pride can do. And then you learned the fine art of desire later. We've heard all about the would-be court mage. You made them think you were powerful, instead of little more than a pretty diversion. What a clever thing you are."
He stands up, smiling. It doesn't reach those cold blue eyes. She decides then and there that when she becomes divine, she will bring them all to her heel. Her people need protecting from what they could become. But she knows power corrupts. This, however, this was the truth, and she will make them pay. She will rip the very fabric of the Order to shreds and remake them, and no one would murder her children again. Gervaso turns away, apparently bored, and walks back over to Blackwall.
"A fine figure of a man you are,"
he says mildly, nudging Blackwall aside with a boot.
You would have made a beautiful Templar. I've tried murder,
Blackwall says, his voice a snarl she doesn't recognize.
Had enough of it for one lifetime. Thanks.
He cries out when Gervasio kicks him, head lolling.
Get the potions,
he says, tone bored as he turns to the knight.
And the others. We need them in good shape.
Elfruit is not pleasant to drink, but even less pleasant when she knows the outcome is that she's physically fit for whatever the Templars want. They've been pushed into a small cell, complete with a locking door, and Dignity went right out of the metaphorical window when Blackwall quietly pleaded with her to curl up next to him. They're curled in a corner, a solitary, ratty blanket draped over them both. She's been healed, but smited so regularly she can barely think, let alone speak. Blackwall is mostly healed, but his arms clearly still ache from the dislocation. It's the first time she's been genuinely grateful he's as broad and hairy as he is. Despite the blood loss, he's warm, and the heat keeps the chill from sinking too deep into her bones. She's not as young as she was, and she'll happily keep her fingers from freezing off, unlike Bull, with his soft curves and heavy muscle underneath, or Dorian's lean, wiry strength. Blackwall is solid, and built like a brick from all the armour he carts around. He does not make a good pillow, but neither does she.
If they...
Blackwall clears his throat.
If they decide to use me, I'll be all right. Won't be the first time I've had bad nights of it.
That's not reassuring, darling, she says, her voice barely audible. If they hear her, they'll smite her again.
Doesn't matter. Better me than you.
He tucks his head against hers, and she can feel the shaking. She hates the whole world at this moment with such a crystal-perfect clarity. This is the moment when people make deals with demons. This is the moment when she will fight her way through a behemoth, untold numbers of Templars, and an entire continent for one person. She never wants to feel him shake like that again. When we are home, she whispers, we should, perhaps, speak.
Perhaps.
The thump of footsteps makes them both flinch, and a human knight appears at the door. Their food is shoved through a small flap at the bottom. Bread, two slices of meat, a hunk of cheese that looks exceptionally terrible. The knight pauses, considering Blackwall with glittering eyes, and smiles. Vivian's heart sinks. This does not bode well. They eat what they can in silence, and they've just finished when a cheerful whistling comes down the hall. Gervasio appears, looking in on them with a bright smile.
Ah, so much better than before, he says, pleased. Do stand up. I'd hate to have to drag you out.
Blackwall struggles to his feet, letting Vivian help him, and clings to her hand as the gate opens. Gervasio waves them through, and they walk out, Blackwall limping heavily, and Vivian's back ramrod straight. They walk down the little hall to the room they were first in, and her heart pounds. Seven knights, the behemoth, an assortment of others, and all of them looking at them, like a meal to be devoured.
You may watch from above.
And she's pulled away from him, to be planted on her knees, above the sunken pit of a room, to the side of the stairs down. A knight stands with her, and she watches with a sinking stomach, as Blackwall is dragged down into the centre, a rope looping around his neck, and his arms bound behind him. He's forced to his knees. And she knows.
No.
She breathes, bile burning her throat. Blackwall is still, wide shoulders seemingly so small without the armour. Gervasio runs his fingers over his hair, snorting softly.
I've never cared for the combination of beard and long hair,
he says conversationally, before tangling his fingers in it and yanking back.
I've always thought it quite ugly. You too are quite ugly. Behind that ugly bush, you might be a handsome man. But I rather doubt it.
She reaches for her magic out of instinct, wanting to throw the man away from him, eyes fixing on the horror before her. It's there, and only years of self-control keep her from doing just as she wishes. The knight beside her is watching the scene below intently, a crystal spiked tongue slipping out to lick his lips. Her stomach rolls, and she focuses.
Areva,
the Iron Bull says, smiling.
A Reaver Mage is a Blood Mage, ma'am.
But you yourself claim not to be a true Reaver, and use their techniques.
She points out. They're drinking tea on her balcony, the Iron Bull almost comically large on her settee.
Sure, but I have the dragon blood in my veins already,
he says.
Areva is fire and death and hacking destruction. Not a good fit for you.
Her speciality is ice. She draws on the serenity of unfeeling as Gervasio lets go of Blackwall's hair and waves one of the more human Templars forward. She sees Dorian and Bull together and thinks them terrifying. They pull on the death around them. Dorian's face a mask of fury as he slaughters his countrymen. Pulling on the fade hard enough, her bones ache in sympathy. The spirits he pulls on grab the bodies, picking up sword and staff. She sees what he is then, under the coal and pretty clothing. He is death. Centuries of breeding come to brutal fruition. He knows his place, knows command with every fibre of his body. She is grateful he never had the opportunity to try for Night Enchanter. Tevinter with him at the helm would be an unstoppable force, for good or evil. She learns from his techniques, compliments his clothing, and does not forget that he is as wild as any Canary Reaver. They laugh like hyenas when he chokes. She sinks deeper into herself, eyes boring into the scene as fury boils, locked under a sea of ice. Sarah, too, is wild, but in other ways. She's wild with Beau, with chemicals, with her love and loyalty. They do not get along, but they do work together on one thing, and one thing alone. Experiments.
Quicksilver,
Sarah says, slamming the bottle on the table.
Piss, it's freaking impossible!
Not so. We've seen it done, Vivian mutters, vexed. They are having surprising difficulty getting it to work.
If only we'd kept one bottle.
Yeah, well, we didn't.
How does it feel? She asks absently, as she measures out sand for another experiment. Sarah considers for a moment.
For a little bit, it's like, all I am is a storm,
she says at last.
You know, the big kinds. Hurricanes?
Hurricane.
That. But in me. Feels like I'm unbreakable, because I'm not one thing, I'm everything, and nothing all at once. Yet we'll slow when I speed up, yeah?
Sarah swings her legs, looking at the ground.
Feel like I can do anything.
Blood frenzy. Death siphon and despair. Quicksilver. And finally, the last piece of the puzzle to make her untouchable. The ice shatters, and she draws her sword. The knight at her side is gone in a flash. She pulls on the spirit of the body, feeding off of it as the blood splashes her face and clothing. Gervasio is already reaching out, but Vivian will not let that stand. She winks out of existence and lands inside him, destroying him from the inside out. She feeds off him as well, lashing out with despair as the Templars surge. The first four that had crowded him dared to reach out and touch soft skin that would never belong to them again. Die first, her sword slicing viciously through bodies and red lyrium. She siphons the death, fuels the rage, reaches in her to the place that Sarah described. She's nothing but lightning now, ice popping and snapping along her blade as she decimates the next three before turning. The behemoth roars at her, massive club arm rising. Not today, she hisses and raises her hand. The club is frozen by the sheer force of her will, a barrier warped to wrap around her hand as she raises her sword, one-handed, and begins to hack. The coppery scent of blood rests in her nose, dripping onto the formerly pristine white collar of her shirt. As she pulls on the fury again for faster work, red lyrium shards fly, and with a furious yell, she lets go of the barrier, puts her hand on the sword, and slams it into the behemoth's heart. For a moment she feels it, the perfect balance of rage and clarity, lightning filling her limbs, and her ice, her specialty, cocooning it all. This is where it ends, she hisses and twists the blade. This is the line in the sand. The behemoth crumbles, falling to the side, and she lets go of the blade. The magic dissipates, falling away into nothing. Vivian, first enchanter, closes her eyes and straightens her shoulders. She turns when she knows she's back in control, and Blackwall looks up at her, emotion welling up. They did not have the chance to make it a reality, just wrapped hands around his neck, just touched. They did no further damage. She does not cry with relief, but it is a near thing.
Thank you,
he manages, and she helps him out of the rope. They limp out of the cave, up a rough ramp and wide stairs, blinking as they step out of the darkness to the sunlight. It's a cool Ferelden morning, crisp with dew, and a stream is running nearby. The sun is cresting the mountains, bright and vibrant. No clouds to be seen.
Do me a favour,
Blackwall says, as they lean on each other, limping to the stream. What's that, dear?
The next time someone tries to bully you, just fucking punch them for me.
Vivian's laugh is something like a sob. Together they drop down into the icy water, ducking under the thin waterfall to scrub the worst of it off themselves. It feels like rebirth. The end.